Good afternoon, and you're very welcome. Good evening, rather, and you're very welcome to the Women's League of Ireland podcast here on finalwhistle.ie. With, of course, myself, Breffany Early, and as ever, Aaron Clark joins us to go through a really long list after an extended international break for ourselves. Aaron, you've been all over the world following the WNT, two defeats in the last couple of weeks. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about all the action going on in the league. So much stuff to get through today. We'll be talking about Cork City getting a warning for playing, making four substitution windows. We'll talk about Turner's Cross being closed. Casey Howe, Matty Gibson absolutely ripping up the league last week. So much stuff. That interview with Richie Sadlier from Vera Powell as well, that's going to get a mention. Of course, we're going to be joined by Alan Heise, a former Treaty United manager, currently the under 17 boss at Bohemians. Aaron, just so much stuff this week to get through.
It's been, do you know what? You think it's going to be a quiet week. Yes, the bit of extended break wasn't ideal, but even when you sort of think about, okay, we'll come back, we'll talk about the fixtures, we'll talk about the results, we'll talk about the international stuff, and then you see the going-ons in the FAI, you see the Vera Powell interview dropping last week, and all of a sudden you're just like, oh no, where do you fit it all? How do you give it all the time it airs? Plus, the other thing that we didn't even mention is the fact that the under-19s qualify for the European Championships, which is an absolute fantastic achievement as a third seed.
We don't talk about football on this show, do we? This is all about the ins and outs of what's happening in the FAI. And you mentioned that it is on the list, of course. Jonathan Hill, he leaves at the end of the month. That's a bit of a surprise announcement, I suppose, from the FAI, although he had been under a lot of pressure in recent weeks. But I suppose on the plus side, from the women's football point of view, a brand new head of women's football.
Yeah, I thought the women's head of women's football sort of was going to peter out a little bit. I'm not going to lie, I had heard murmurs the week before Hill announces he was gone, that it happened already. And I'd heard murmurs of it from a good friend of mine who sort of, when it comes to a lot of these things, he was right when it came to Vera Powell getting the Ireland job as well. He's right with a lot of things. So I wasn't at all surprised. And yeah, new head of women's football coming in. It's an interesting one. Like, so many candidates were sort of spooked off by the job for the fact of the whole tenure. It's up in the air. It'd be interesting to know what sort of contract the FAI did give in the end. Did they give a certain length of period? I, for one, feel it's disrespectful for that role if you're saying it's a fixed-term contract because there's a potential that Eileen Gleeson can go back into it. You either take the senior job where you take the senior job because you want the senior job, not that you take the senior job with a potential that you may be able to go back to your old role in the future. I think that's sort of, it's a bit of a backward step, and it's sort of a bit of an old FAI regime that reminds me so much of, and it's the sort of things we thought we were doing away with. And it'll be interesting to see how the new head of women's football sort of hits the ground. I'd be interested to sort of get Alban's opinion of it as well when he joins us about the whole MGL, DDSL sort of stuff. I think that needs to be sorted as well, because I have friends who have young kids who have games being called off because of it, and it's having an impact and stuff like that. So that sort of stuff has to be high on the threshold and high on the to-do list early on.
Yeah, we'll talk about all of that if we get a chance in the next hour or so. If you have a question for us and you're watching here, drop us a comment somewhere, wherever you're watching, on YouTube or on Twitter or Facebook. We do have the opportunity to put that to Alban over the next 50 minutes or so of the show. We might as well get straight into it then and bring Alban into the program. Alban, not your first time on the show, but it was your first time with a Bows jacket on you on the show. Welcome back to the league after your departure from Tralee at the end of last season.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me, lads. I'll correct you into that it's not the first time on a Bows jacket.
That's on this show.
Third time on this show. Okay.
On this show.
Okay.
Yeah.
On this show. Definitely.
I suppose, we were very aware of your, what was going on in your world down in Limerick over the last 12, 14 months. But what have you been up to since that kind of came to an end at the end of last season?
A much needed break, especially from all the traveling. It was almost another 7 hours on top of your daily job. So, you know, it becomes quite difficult, you know, throughout the year to keep going on that. And in reality, the option was there potentially to have a break this year, you know, I was really contemplating that because, you know, you need to recharge the batteries again.
Did you think, I don't mean, I'm not saying this in a bad way, but did you think after the year you had with Treaty that maybe if it's not a head coach job, that something else would come of an option in the senior league? Or did any options open themselves up to maybe that you thought just isn't the right time?
Well, without going into the details of it and mentioning clubs, but yes, you know, there was a couple of options. Obviously, they did not materialise. I was looking forward, actually, to continue in the senior league, providing, you know, the year that we had with Treaty. And it cannot be underestimated, even though, you know, when you look at the league table, you might think, oh, well, listen, you know, they were just in front of Cork. But the reality of the stats year on year to what we had achieved, be that in terms of points, goals, you know, and so many different stats, it was amazing. Not to mention, you know, the very youthful team and the many changes that we had throughout the seasons of players, you know, leaving at certain points. It's just we were asked to pretty much, you know, do a job in terms of stopping the shaping of goals, you know, from a board perspective. And I think we did a lot more than that during the year. So, you know, yes, answering your question, I would have loved to continue. But listen, you never know what's around the corner in this league.
Looking at them this year, what's your thoughts on how they've gone so far? Three games in, still haven't been beaten, which I think goes to your point in terms of that stop on the rot that had been there for a couple of seasons, where they were getting beaten 5 or 6 nil every week almost. That seems to be a thing of the past now. They're competitive in all their games this season.
I think they have done great. They have got a fantastic backbone in the team. I went and seen them in Tala, and you know, yes, there is always, you know, room for improvement in the team. But, you know, compared to where Treaty have been during the years and to have the start that they have had this year, it's just, you know, the momentum and the confidence that it brings to the club, to the players, and, you know, attracting, you know, the attendances in there. It's just an amazing feeling. Obviously, you know, I just went and met everyone at the club in Tala, and it's just amazing to see that kind of improvement year on year.
I have to give a shout out to Kieran McCormick. I think she missed the two goals that day in Tala after going the wrong direction. I remember seeing on social media.
I believe she missed the stadium, and she arrived I think about 10 or 15 minutes after that. But listen, they did great, and they are doing great. And I think, you know, they are at the dark horses in this league this year.
Who has impressed you, other than Treaty, who has impressed you this year, Ivan?
Athlone, very much so. You know, I'm looking forward, actually, you know, to the next few games, because, you know, it's not to mention Galway, you know, it's just outstanding that they are still unbeaten in the league, and they are sitting out there, I say, comfortably. You know, it's almost, you know, never heard of in previous years. And it will be a biggie, you know, when they play the next game. But definitely those two teams, Athlone and Galway.
Breffni, I'm going to take a lot of credit for this if Galway in the league this year, and I'll tell you why. Because last year I said they were going to finish bottom, and I can imagine that was hung up somewhere. And this year I said they're probably a year or two off. And if they go and do it, I'd say they brought that rope up on the dressing room wall sometime, somewhere, all the doubt and all the saying no. In terms of the actual league itself, Alwyn and Breffni, it'd be interesting to get your opinion. With the fact of, like, you look at this weekend in particular, probably one of the lowest scoring weekends probably of all time in the league.
Well, unless you're Bowes. You know, they ship four goals, but I think that's been uncharacteristic for them as well in recent seasons. But it's my opinion on it will be that the standard's getting better. We've seen Alban's involved with the 17s. He might have a more up-to-date version of this. It's been five or six years since I was involved with the team at that level. But you're seeing girls coming through to senior teams now with National League experience for maybe from the age of 14 or 15. And they've played at that level week in, week out. They're playing against better players. They're playing with better players, better facilities, better coaches. And I think that is what we're seeing, that gap get smaller. The pool of players is getting bigger. Alban, I don't know if you would agree or disagree with that.
I would totally agree. Without wanting to repeat what you just said there, I would say definitely, you know, the level of coaching has improved in terms of
you would say that.
Getting nowadays. No, but it is true because, you know, you see a lot of teams, and I do remember down the years, you know, the level and the standards were completely different. So, you know, we are improving quite a lot. And you mentioned something very interesting where, you know, players of 17 years of age could have a lot of League of Ireland experience, be that even training with senior teams, you know, so they are given that chance a lot earlier, you know, to taste the water, so to speak. And, you know, that provides a different pool of players that we have ever had in the country. So, you know, I would definitely agree that the league, it's a lot stronger this year to what it has been in the last few years. You know, you cannot pick a team and say that, you know, this team ain't going to get points out of any of the other teams in the league. So, you know, definitely one of the strongest leagues that we have seen.
Just to follow up to that, though, what's it like compared to, what's the standard of coach, not necessarily coaching, the standard of players now coming into the pathway at 16, like compared to maybe 5 years ago, you know, them younger players when they first come into it, what's the standard like now of them when they first come into the National League level to maybe compare to, you know, a couple of years ago, even when the leagues, when the underage leagues even started?
I'll definitely say, Aaron, that the technicality of the game and the players has changed. In the past, you know, you had physical players, you had players that potentially would understand the tactics of the game. But, you know, when it came to the basics, and I really do mean the basics, because at times you even see it at senior level that some of the players are outstanding in doing certain things, but, you know, very poor at doing the basics. And I do mean ball mastery, passing, you know, being able to manipulate the ball or run or, you know, bring the ball into different directions. That level is changing all the time. And, you know, when we're looking at the youngest players that are arriving into Women National League now, you know, they are all almost able, you know, to do things that even at senior level, at times we're still missing.
For me, my biggest eye-opener back in 2018 in the first year of that under-17 league was throw-ins. You're taking girls who might have been centre midfield for their junior team, their underage team. They did everything, took the free kicks, the whole shebang, and now all of a sudden they're just one of 20 girls who are nearly all around the same level, and they're playing right back or left back or on the wing, and they don't know how to take a throw-in because they've never actually taken a throw-in in their lives, because they were always the one who was the target for that possession when it was happening at the lower level in the regional leagues and the county leagues. So for me, that stood out a mile. I don't think you'd have that problem anymore. The girls seem to come in with a much better grounding, maybe down to the emerging talent programs, the interleague competitions at under 14, under 15 that they come out of. Yeah, there's definitely an opportunity there for better players to come through. I suppose we've so much to get through, Alban.
Just,
and we'd love
just before I do, I just want to ask one thing, just off the back of that, because it's specifically on the back of that. Do you think then, just because of that, the technicality and stuff like that, it's going to make it harder to have them sort of crossover players like we've seen the likes of Katrina Parrott coming back after years, Sarah Rowe sort of dipping in and out, you know, Lauren O'Neill, a treaty sort of coming back after playing Camogie. Is it going to make it harder then for them sort of players to do that as the league continues to grow?
I would certainly, from a personal and opinion, I would certainly say that is the case. It will be very hard in the next 3, 4, 5 years for any players that have not played at a certain age. And I would even go as far as saying that if you're not getting the technical part within from 7 to 14 years of age, you know, almost that gap, it's unforgivable, and you're not going to get back into it. And those players that we have got coming through at the moment, they will not allow, you know, other players to come back from different countries, be that, you know, from the same country that they might have disconnected from the sport. It will not allow that to happen. And that will happen very quickly, Aaron. Probably within the next 3, 4 years, that will happen.
I think the player pool is so wide now at the base of it. And it's more about the base than at the very top, because the top players have always been quality. They've gone away. The Katie McCabe's, the Denise O'Sullivan's after a year or two, Megan Campbell. There's a list as long as your arm. those type of players, the Tara O'Hanlons, I know we chatted about her off air beforehand. Alban, you had her at Piedmont for a few seasons. They will continue to go to the level that they're going to be at, whether it's in the collegiate system or in the WSL or the NWSL or whatever it might be. But it's the number 15, 16 to 20 on your panel has got so massively better than they were 4 to 5 years ago, 10, 12 years ago. It's unrecognizable. With all due respect to some of the girls I would have worked with a decade, 15 years ago, they walked into League of Ireland teams in season one and season two. Some of them wouldn't get within an ass's roar of a team now because of that better standard of youngster coming through. And if you're going to invest in a player, time, resources, coaching, hours, you want a good, exciting 19, 20-year-old versus a good kind of a 30-year-old who hasn't quite made the grade. And that's not a slight at anyone. They were of their time and they were brilliant at the time they were there, but they wouldn't get into teams now. And they probably will be the first to admit that as well.
Very true. Very true. You know, that's it. You know, there is no way that in the next few years that will happen again. Like, you know, there's no two ways about it. And it's great actually to see the talent coming through, and it's great to see the development that has been done, you know, be that from an emerging talent's perspective and you know, what coaches bring to the table. You see clubs now demanding actually, and, you know, I'll be in touch with certain clubs, especially into, you know, underage levels, you know, to bring the ball mastery and bring all that into the background. And they are the ones demanding now rather than, you know, offering your services. So, you know, even the mindset, I would say, has changed in the clubs rather than just the kids themselves. So, you know, the whole of, you know, perception completely has transformed, you know, the way we're looking at developing kids nowadays.
Alban, Aaron touched on it in the introduction to the show about the new women's football, head of women's football in the FAI. Your thoughts on the appointment? English coach has come in, has coached in the men's game in the professional setting. Is that the right profile of person that we need for the sport to grow in this country? Or would we even better off looking at someone maybe from the grassroots coming up with that as the focus? What's your thoughts on that?
Again, my thoughts will be that we have the people in Ireland to go and potentially, you know, walk in those kind of positions, and, you know, every opportunity should be given, you know, for people that are residing, are staying here, and they do care about the game. And by no means I'm saying that, you know, the person that's coming in, it's not into that you know, position of helping out to grow the game, but, you know, someone from the country will know a lot better the system, will know the teams, will know the clubs, and they will be able to offer a lot more to someone that has to catch up. I think a lot, like in any other position, you will need a few months just to get your head around to what's going on and what the systems are. And again, relating to what Aaron said earlier on, do we know what kind of contract has been given? Because it will be very interesting if the contract, let's say, was for 1 year or 2 years, you know, does that justify the time that they will be working in gaining the information and knowledge, and all of a sudden when they are up to speed, will they have to leave again? So, you know, it's the detailing that we are not privy in the background that makes all the difference in those kind of decisions, you know. But again, you will have to give them the time and hope that, you know, they will be doing a good job.
The thing for me, honest,
Hannah Digley, just to give her a bit of background in her own qualification, she's a UEFA Pro license holder. She is currently the academy manager at Forest Green Rovers. She has had a spell, I think, at Forest Green, or was it Burton Albion, where she was the first team manager
Forest Green. She took over.
So she has a good CV. She's a senior lecturer in sports coaching, along with she has an MSc, a master's in coaching, and a BSc in sports science. So she does definitely have the qualifications to do the job. It's just that stuff you've talked about, Alban, the familiarity with the leagues, with the politics as well, because that's such a huge part of our game. Who maybe it doesn't like who, and who doesn't talk to who, and if you talk to that person, you're going to be misaligned with somebody else. It's the stuff that we're all familiar with that we kind of take for granted as people who have been around the game for a decade or two, but a new person coming into that, there's a lot of opportunities to create tension that is unintentional, or is that?
It is, right. Yeah. You know, there is a little bit of that, but you know, again, what was mentioned earlier on, like, I would love to know, you know, for how long the contract is, because, you know, that will tell me, you know, why the decision was made. And you know, if you tell me now it will be 4 to 5 years, then, you know, I can buy into it. But if it is for 1 year and 2 years, you know, will they have the time to change everything? And we have seen a lot of changes, especially, you know, from people that come from the outside and live in. And, you know, in a way, if you have got continuity in terms of the people that are within the country, you know, there is the same system, and there is that part that you would think that the next person will pick where it was left off, rather than having to learn everything from scratch. But listen, Anna will have all the qualifications. Let's see, you know, if she manages, you know, to give us that development that we badly need.
One of the non-negotiables for me, Raffini, is she has to be based in this country.
Oh, that should be 100%, yeah.
Like, this stuff of Jonathan Hill commuting, I'd love to know, is Mark Hannum full-time based here as well? Like, for them sort of roles, you have to be full-time based in the country. You have to be out speaking to people. Like, the one thing I will say, and I know a lot of people didn't necessarily like Colin Bell, but Colin Bell, if you ask Colin Bell about any player in the National League at the time when he was managing Ireland, he'd be able to tell you about that player, their strengths, their weaknesses, whether no matter what club they played with. He went and visited every club. He went and spoke to every club. There was times where I've often had conversations with him out in clubs before games, and he's talking about players who you're like, how do you even know anything about that player? And I think that's the sort of thing in and around this sort of environment is that the new head of women's football is going to have to get stuck in and get to know what the major issues are. And I think realistically, not going to be able to solve everything in a quick manner, and we probably don't expect that. I think with the likes of Eileen Gleeson, the other people within the FAI, Mark Hannum, they probably sort of have to get out a bit of strategy of a what's of high urgency, high importance, and sort of start to tick them off and cross them off before they even look at any of the smaller things. But
what's on that list for, if you had to pick three things that you need, that you think that role should be focused on, both of you, what are the three things on your list that are top priority?
For me, number one, one of the high priorities is sorting the mess with the DWSL and MGL, because the only people who are suffering is young girls. And
can you explain what's going on there for people who might not be familiar with it?
It's pretty much there's a struggle of power between people within the MGL and the NWS and DDSL. So pretty much the NDDSL, the two separate leagues in the NDDSL, are trying to get them all in. They're trying to move all the players over to that league. And it's sort of been, they had nearly agreements, then it's sort of fallen off. And there was sort of ultimatums being made that, you know, no team in the NDDSL would play against MGL teams. And it's making kids suffer. It's not making anyone else. And like, the one thing we talk about in sport at the minute is this dropout rate of kids, dropout rate of females in sport. Like, we see other sports thriving, in especially in the capital, we see Gaelic football thriving. Like, can you imagine you have 6-7 young players who are playing, or even more, in a local area where the small teams, they only have one team, and all of a sudden they can't play football. They're gonna look to do something different. Are they gonna play sport? Are they not gonna play sport? To me, the next biggest thing would probably be, I think we need an under 23 international team to bridge the gap between under 19s and senior. I think the gap is too big, and you can see the benefits of England, Sweden, teams like that have, where they can just send up teams to play in like under 23 competitions or reserve competitions, where other players are getting exposure at international level, because, you know, there's only so many players we can fit in there. And the third thing would probably be the expansion of the national leagues, in terms of bringing in more places that we don't necessarily have involved as well, and trying to get more and more clubs involved.
Alvin, any other things you think need to be a priority on that list?
No, I think Aaron has mentioned pretty much all of them. What I would say is that, you know, the grassroots, especially, you know, NDSL and MGL, they will have to be sorted out ASAP, because, you know, these are the kids that are suffering due to politics rather than, you know, anybody else. Not sure what the power from the FAI will be in that, but, you know, I'm hoping that there is some sort of power where they can intervene and sort that out once and for all, so that, you know, the kids can start you know, getting back to it. And that relates with Aaron, what Aaron said in relation to kids dropping out. If you're not playing games, and I know teams that I haven't played for a while, and there is weeks non-playing games, and then, you know, you get all of a sudden after 4 or 5 weeks you go and play a game, you know, it's just out of touch, out of bound, you know. So, you know, we cannot be having that in the country while we're trying to develop the game and you know, bring, you know, the Women National League up to a certain level. And again, the 23s, I think, you know, that would be a great option to have for our teams, because most of the players fall into those gaps, you know, in an international level, whereby they can make the first team. They're not moving abroad yet. You know, the chances are very limited, you know, if they're playing in this league. So, you know, they will have to have something else to be looking forward to, rather than just, oh, I'm never going to be picked. And, you know, the levels also within the league could potentially drop because of that.
Myself and Aaron have beat this around the houses many times. My preference, rather than a 23s team, would be a university's team. I think in terms of resources, facilities, budgets, the age profile of the girls, the educational interests of most of the girls, the academic focus of a lot of them up to 21, 22, as then an opportunity to move to the UK if that's what they want to do. That's where I think the opportunities lie. But I don't think we're going to agree on that one, Aaron. Let's talk briefly about the international games, because all these girls, they move abroad, they do end up coming back to play for Ireland. And we had two games against England and France in recent weeks. Aaron, you were at both, I think. I watched both, but I was disappointed in portions, but I suppose there was definitely green shoots there, particularly maybe in the last 20 minutes against England, when we really took it to them in a game where it would have been very easy to roll over. And now you're looking at me as if to say, like, what are you talking about? But we had chances at the closing stages against England. We forced a few corners. We had opportunities. Your thoughts on the games?
Do you know what the most disappointing thing about the two games was? The amount of times that Ireland tried to play a pass 10, 15 yards and the pass just went astray. It's something that Alvin has said earlier on, your basics. That's the one thing that was probably the most disappointing, was when they were getting attacks. Because realistically, you go into these games against France and England, you're sort of thinking, okay, we're not favourites here. We're expected to get well beaten in these games. We're expected to be beaten out the door. We're playing against the second and fourth team in the world. You're expecting to lose these games. But, like, you look at them, the French game, okay, it was 1-0. It was a goal that was so preventable. Heather Payne with the pullback on the player, gives the free kick away. The ball comes into the box in a free kick, and she's allowed to just pass it back across the goal, and it's not going to be missed from there. It's a carbon copy of the first goal against England as well, except it's from across this time, where McCabe doesn't defend the cross, and it's headed back across, and Lauren James fires home from close range. Like, it's when you look at it, it's just sort of things that are preventable that probably costs the three goals, because the penalty as well, it's a poor header that heads it straight to Kira Walsh. Listen, Rusha Littlejohn probably doesn't know an awful lot about it when it's hit at that stage, but, like, they're probably three preventable goals. Going forward, I didn't think we were great. I thought that, I don't want to sound bad when I say this, but it was like when you put Louise Quinn up top, it's sort of a hoof it long and beam. The thing is, we're going to have to be more direct at times, and that's the sort of reality of it. And, like, I don't know what your understanding is of the playoff structure, but for me, these results are massive. Even if they are losses, they're massive when it comes to the playoff structure, because the fact that Switzerland have to be given an automatic position for the Euros because they're in League B, it now means that there's one less place available. So when it comes to the playoffs, obviously the teams in League A will play against teams in League C. But when the winners of that, there will then be six teams from League A, and there will be eight teams from League A, and there'll be six from League B, which means that one League A team is going to have to play one League A team. So it's going to go based on the lowest ranked team. So realistically, although there were defeats, yes, we want to stay in the top tier, but it could come down to something as much as goal difference or getting a point in one of these games to whether Ireland play against the League A or a League B team in the playoff for the Euros. So, like, defensively, losing the game, aggregate over 3-0 over two games, I'm not overly disappointed, but there is still an awful lot more that needs to be done going forward.
Did you catch the games, Alban, to see either of the two?
Yes. Listen, it's one of those things that, you know, you can judge the games from the outside. Obviously, you know, not being able to work with players and know the capabilities of the players. At times, you might think, you know, in order to get a result, you might go back to the Stone Ages. But at the same time, you know, will the country go in revolt because, you know, we are going backwards rather than, you know, trying to get a point. At times, again, I find that you have to do what you need to do in order to get a point and to get a result. And again, you know, it's up to the manager and the players at the disposal, you know, to go with a certain plan to go and do that. You know, anyone in the country would have taken, you know, 1-0 and 2-0 beforehand, you know, just looking at the caliber of teams that we were playing. But again, you know, it's very hard to judge from the outside, you know.
We did have a couple of chances to nick goals. So things, a point isn't an unrealistic expectation or hope maybe going into the return legs in a couple of months. So, yep.
The one thing is, though, when you can see it early in both games, you can easily lose these games 6-0. Yep. That's the other side. But you can easily go and floodgates open and you know, be beaten out the door. And I think that's probably the most important thing is, yes, did they ride their luck at times? Absolutely, especially in the French game in particular, they rode their luck quite a bit. But sometimes you have to have that little bit of luck, that little bit of luck on your side. Sweden and the doubleheader next is, I think they need to get something out of these games. Like, let's call a spade a spade. League B, some of the Premier Division teams would have won six games in that League B campaign. You know, some of them would have had the capability of winning the six games. It's a massive step up into League A. We're the most unlucky country in the world because of the fact that the way the draw fell to get England, France and Sweden in one group. Like, you look at some of the other groups and you're sort of thinking, oh no. But that's life. You know, it's exciting. It's the exciting thing about it. You know, you want to be in the big teams. It's going to take some time to adapt. It's going to take some time to get there. And, like, it's a learning curve. It's a new experience for a lot of our players as well.
Talk to me about some of the positives. Anna Patton, she made her debut, played both games, full 180 minutes across the two games. She, in addition to the side, Aoife Mannion, of course, coming back into the team as well. Two English-born players, but they've really seemed to have taken to the Irish squad in the recent months.
Right, I'm going to say this now. If you'd asked me a half-time of the French game, I'd have said, whip Aoife Mannion off straight away. Playing a left-back was absolutely mental of a decision because she's not a left-sided player. When she switched over to the right, you could see she was definitely a lot better. Thought against England, she got caught out a couple of times. Like, the problem with her is she hasn't got an awful lot of game time in the sense that of coming back from injury. Yes, she's a very good player. Anna Patton is a smashing player, plays regularly and plays nearly every minute for Aston Villa in the WSL. But then again, yes, there are additions, but the other side of it is, and this is the one thing that was something that we even recognised in the press boxes, there was only four players who've come up through Ireland who are born in Ireland playing in that game. The rest have come through. And the problem is, the players at the minute, because of the fact that the league is only going professional, we're going to see more and more of this. That's where we're going to need the exposure, the growth at home to close that gap over the years to come. Because let's be honest, some of the players who've come in from abroad have made great additions. Sinead Farrelly, I'm an absolute massive fan of Sinead Farrelly. Like to see her back in the squad when she's fit again. You know, these sort of players have big impacts. And, you know, it's great when they can come in, and it's great that they can show positive. Like, I'm happy to see them in. It's finding that fine balance is the biggest thing. But listen, that's why I'm not the Ireland manager. That's why I don't go and select Ireland squads. I'll leave it to Eileen Gleeson.
Speaking about...
Is it our,
Go on, no, you go, Al.
No, just wanted to ask a question to Aaron there. But is it the issue, Aaron? Would it be that players are coming from the outside, or that, you know, potentially, you know, they're not good enough? Because, you know, if you're looking at most teams, you know, whatever players they can get from an international perspective, they will just go and get the players. It doesn't matter who they are. You know, yes, you're related to a professional league, you know, and that will take a bit of time to get there. So, you know, the most likely destination for most players will be to go and get them into a better leagues or stronger leagues, and that will continue. It's just a matter of, you know, how do you get to play those players in what positions? And again, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, depending on what you have in the squad, you know, at times you will play players out of position. And I'm not saying that lightly, because, you know, in an international level, it's very hard to switch players, you know, if they're not used to a certain position. But, you know, you will have to look at what are the players available for that position. And if there is none, then potentially, you know, that's why they might have taken those kind of decisions, you know, trying to do the best of a certain situation, you know.
You're dead right. And to be honest with you, and if anybody says anything, I would not have played Megan Campbell for 60, 70 minutes in either of them two games. She's not ready to play that long length at that game. Putting one of the youngsters in is a massive risk. She would have thought that maybe putting Aoife Mannion at left back is a lower risk than putting somebody in who may not be fully ready to play. I 100% get that and 100% understand that, and then that's the calls you're gonna make, and you see it on a weekly basis within the National League as well, and like that's why managers are paid that money, because they have to make that and try to do what's best to get a result. Like, realistically, coming out of that international window, I expected to lose the two games, so I'm not overly disappointed. I'd just like to see a little bit more going forward, but I'm not overly disappointed from the two games.
Let's talk about something else in the international realm, and we'll keep this short because we could go on for hours. Last week, an episode of episodes with Richard Sadlier dropped, where he went to visit Vera Powell. I listened to it twice last week because I wanted to make sure I fully understood what she was trying to say at points. Before I say anything, I might ask you, Alban, I'll start with you. Have you listened to it? And if not, maybe then I'll jump to Aaron. What's your thoughts on it? And that whole situation.
There is so much from that, Brittany. Well, first and foremost, as we all know, there is always two sides to the same story. So, you know, we are listening to Vera and potentially, you know, being emotional and you get empathic to what's being said. But, you know, we haven't heard the story from the other side, even though you hear bits and pieces, you know, you wouldn't know exactly what has happened. So that is one thing in relation to some of the things that were mentioned. I understand from a manager perspective, you know, how she felt and you know, potentially how lonely it gets and, you know, how you go into those dark places, which is, you know, part and parcel, I would say, of most jobs nowadays, because most of the managers have got a very short life into certain clubs or even in management. So, you know, it's one of those things that potentially it's not to be mentioned, but, you know, it's part and parcel of what we do. So, you know, you get into those places and it's understandable. Some of the other things that were mentioned in terms of, you know, the ongoing interviews that were happening while, you know, everything is going on, even during the World Cup, I would have agreed with her in terms of, you know, that should not have happened while, you know, we're trying to go and get, you know, into winning games and you know, you need a united front, you need a united team rather than bringing, you know, thoughts into players' heads and you know, it becomes disjointed, you know, so there is a lot in there. So, you know, potentially we might be picking different things that were said, but there is quite a lot, you know, in that interview.
So I'm going to take this from a completely different aspect. And the reason why is because I was around her in Australia. I seen some, you know, I was around her a bit in Australia. I was speaking to the players during the World Cup and like the thing that we got from, not even from the interview, is more in general from Vera, is that at the World Cup she looked a defeated woman, but she was still trying to, in the public eye, clamour that little, I might get this contract. I'm on the record of saying if Ireland won the World Cup, I don't think she gets the contract. Still, she wasn't getting that contract, even if they won the World Cup. For me, you could see that the players had lost it in her. Like, there was media being done before the Nigeria game, and, you know, players were being asked about her. Players wouldn't comment. It was nearly as if the players had a conversation together. They knew who was going to do the media that day. They knew the questions were going to come. They knew that sort of thing was going to happen, but they didn't want to sort of engage in it. They didn't want to get drawn into it. When I listened to the interview, the one thing that I don't like, if it is true, is the issue with the players if the players did come into the dinner room wearing different gear. If that happens to me, that's not great. Like, I know from being on the outside, from being in and around things, the relationship wasn't always great with the players. Like I said to you, Brett, from my opinion, I thought she'd lost the dressing room long before the World Cup, long before they'd qualified for the World Cup. And like, even when you look back now to things like how selection was done, you know, where the players sort of knew certain players potentially weren't in the squad before they knew, you know, it was sort of a difficult one. And I will say this, and because I don't think we qualify for that World Cup if she's not in charge. I don't think we do. And I know you don't like that, Brethany, but that's...
I'm not disagreeing with you. I really haven't. Go on, sorry.
I don't think we do. I don't. Some of the performances, the thing about it is she knew at times she was going to have to be under pressure. She was going to have to be, you know, hold out and sort of try and sucker punch teams. And I just think that, you know, while the interview is sad, it's disappointing on everybody's front, because, you know, the way the relationship ended, it was extremely horrible. I thought the way it was dealt with on all sides was poor. The FAI could easily just come out pre-World Cup and said, listen, we decided we're going to hang off, we're not going to do it. Like, every single press conference during the World Cup, before the first game, second game, third game, she's been asked about contract, what's happening about your contract. And as Alban has just said there, you can only imagine how lonely that sort of, that was for her. And like, I the one thing I will say, the way Diane Caldwell spoke out, someone was always going to speak out, and I said that to you, Bradley, somebody was always going to talk. That wasn't handled well. But the biggest thing for me is there's no winners out of either the podcasts, the Diane Caldwell situation, the whole Vera Powell ending situation. There's absolutely no winners out of it.
Oh, I'd say Richard Salah. Second captain's probably come out of it looking well. But can I just, on that, because you've touched on a few things, and I'm not anti-Vera Powell necessarily. I just have a huge amount of problems with some of the stuff she did. And I think...
So do I.
I also think the FAI didn't cover themselves in glory in this. And recently, I'm a bit of a pro-FAI person, which is rare for me. I think they're doing a lot of things reasonably well. But I think this one is one they didn't handle well. When that report came out last year and Vera was named in that NWSL report, they backed her, I think, the same night, if not the next morning. And for me, that was too quick. They didn't do any... It's quite obvious they didn't do any investigation of their own into that situation. They might have been caught blindsided. I don't know why, because we all knew it was happening. So I can't understand why they wouldn't have been aware of it and maybe looked into it a bit more. I think the players saw enough in the treatment of Tyler Toland in terms of how she was dealt with in person at a camp, or at least rumored to have been dealt with in person at a camp. And then also in terms of how she publicly said, a text message doesn't count as contact. The girl was 17 at the time, or 18 at the time. To me, that's contact. You know, like, if you get a thumbs up from a 17-year-old in a reply, you're doing pretty well. Alban, you have a daughter that age. You probably know all about this, you know? So yeah. For me, I think she had to be the adult in the room in that situation, and she wasn't. And she, the text message I felt was from Tyler at 17 or 18 years of age is a break the ice attempt. It's a first contact attempt. And Vera could have picked up the phone and rang her. I think that would have been a fair exchange in that environment. Vera didn't do that. She chose to publicly come out and criticize Tyler again about that. Tyler comes back in. She's one of the best players on the team. Player of the match in her first game back in the Aviva Stadium. It goes to show that she should have been in the squad probably the whole time. Vera messed that up. And I think the players look at that situation and the allegations that of the treatment that Tyler got, amongst other players that we've heard rumors about, and it matched what the report said. And I think that's when she lost the dressing room. The FAI knew she'd lost the dressing room, but they didn't have the balls to come in and say, we're getting rid of her, or we're giving her the World Cup and then it's curtains, and be straight up with her at Christmas last year. That's what should have happened. And I think that ultimately is what caused all the unrest, as it just the media coming into the World Cup, contract. If they had nipped that in the bud pre-Christmas last year, it would have been like, oh, she's going to the World Cup, but she's not staying on afterwards. And come up with a publicly facing message of why that's not happening. And everybody would have come out of it looking better. The players would have known she was going, although they probably knew she was going, let's be honest, from their actions. But that's my take on it, for what it's worth.
I think Aaron mentioned it earlier on that, you know, she had lost the dressing room. And if that is true, and relating to what you were saying, Brittany, in relation to the report being backed up so quickly, the question remains, and exactly you touched on it, why was she not let go at that moment in time when they knew that, you know, all of this was ongoing rather than going on? And this is the part that personally, you know, from a management perspective, I don't like that. You know, if you have given her enough to go to the World Cup, then you might as well just back her up, 100%. You know, that we do well. And then after that, obviously everyone knew what was coming. But, you know, back her up. You know, there is no point starting all that, you know, during that time.
Yeah, 100%. Well, now, I will
I'll answer the question of why they potentially didn't get rid of her. Is it the same reason that they allowed Stephen Kenny to continue and continue and continue? They couldn't afford to get rid of her. Is that the...
That could be an issue. I will say Vera does deny all allegations that were contained in the report and that have been alleged about her, both in New York, or both in Houston and in her time in the NWSL and with Ireland as well. She refutes all the allegations. And so we have to... innocent until proven guilty, as far as I'm concerned. But just for me, there seems to be a lack of humanity there in terms of how she spoke. There's no personal responsibility. And I didn't see her take responsibility for anything that went wrong at the World Cup. And we've all been involved in situations that go south. Everybody has a part to play. And I haven't seen her take her share of any responsibility of any of those situations. And that's for me. For me, the one thing, she didn't use Richard's name in the entire episode. This is a woman who's worked with him, who's been on RTE panels with him. She never called him by name once. And that, for me, is a huge thing. We've all used each other's names here when we're talking to each other. It's natural. It's what happens. I didn't feel that there was any empathy in Vera at all in that interview last week. We're going to move on because we are running out of time and we could get sucked down that rabbit hole really, really quickly. Let's talk about the football of the weekend and let's rapid fire through some of these games. Galway United, top of the league, 4 wins from 4. Phil Trill's got to be delighted, but also the nature of the win. They had that game dead and buried at halftime. Aaron, your thoughts on Galway's start of the season so far?
Some of the goals they scored as well, and it was an impressive Galway performance. I thought they'd win the game. I didn't think they'd win the game by that magnitude. I thought Bowes coming into the game, especially off the back of the result against Cork, they'd definitely been hurting, but the Cork performance probably wasn't great. And then to go in and back that up with a 4-0 defeat, it's a difficult one, especially when you're looking at Bowes. I've got so many young players. You know, you look at young, I think it's Savannah Kane up top. I think she's only 16. You've got the likes of Ava Brennan coming in there. You've got so many young kids who, while there's experience there, are going to take some time to get up to the level. Like, I think realistically, it's not to be surprised by the nature of the result. But I think there's definitely a lot of learnings there for Bowers from a Galway point of view. The train just continues, and I know All Ireland Cup this weekend, but for me, I'm already looking ahead to the week after the All Ireland Cup when they play P Mount in the league, and that's when we're really going to see that big test out of Galway.
Alban, I'm going to ask you your thoughts on the Athlone P Mount game. How good is Casey Howe? Did you see her second goal, the the lob.
Fantastic. You know, if any of the big players would have scored that kind of goal in the Premiership, we would have been talking for weeks. It's just an amazing touch. And it's so difficult to do, actually. You know, for those of us that have played a little bit, you know, that's a death touch. You know, it's just amazing. Genuinely, you know, one of the best goals, not to say the best goal of the season.
Alban, wasn't a penalty?
No comment.
I don't think it was. I don't think it was.
I'm still a P-Man fan.
Listen, we're all P-Man. We're all a fan of P-Man. What they done last year, but I don't think it was a penalty. I'd have massive concerns defensively with P-Man at the minute. How they were ripped apart so much in the second half. Like, you look at the way Matty Gibson got down that left side. I know Casey scored twice, but I would have given player the match to Matty Gibson
100%, yeah,
all day long. I thought Matty was superb. I thought Casey could add five or six. The one thing I'll take from a P-Man viewpoint is they probably should have been further ahead early on. They had chances to be further ahead. And, like, you're looking at that sort of game and, like, yes, it's a defeat against one of your rivals, but I said to you at the start of the year, Breffy, I still think this will be the lowest winning Premier Division title. Albeit Galway have won every game so far, but I don't think that will continue. But I do think the points tally will be the lowest, and these results against each other, they'll flip flop for the entire season. I think for the other teams, it's going to be how they get on against the so called teams below them.
Are you on a commission of whatever Phil Trill's getting paid in Galway? Because
I wish
every single week.
By the way, we love Phil Trill. We love Phil Trill.
Treaty and Sligo, Alban, your old charges, a lot of new faces in there with the Canadian influence over the winter. They've really hit the ground running, as we've talked about, unbeaten so far, one win, two draws in the opening three games in the league. All that being said, will they be disappointed not to have beaten Sligo at the weekend?
I would say so on paper. That should have been the case. There was a couple of changes there in the team. Some players that potentially haven't played a lot. But, you know, realistically, if you're looking at it at home, you would want to win, especially with the start that Treaty have had so far this year. But I would say in the general overall, a draw was a fair result.
I tweeted you. Both goalkeepers were phenomenal. Some unbelievable saves. Both Amber Hardy for Sligo and Anne-Marie Uliak for...
Both superb, aren't they?
Yeah, they're two fantastic goalkeepers. That's probably a huge part of the 0-0. It wasn't a great game, though. I watched most of it.
I tweeted at the weekend. I don't think this is going to be a bad result in the long term for either side. Because I watched Sligo against Shelbourne, and I watched P-Mount. I watched Treaty's game against Shamrock Rovers. I think both of these sides are capable of beating some of the bigger teams this year and actually getting results this year. The way Tommy Hewitt sets them up, as you've said in previous, it's not always pretty, but it's very effective. And I just think Treaty are gonna continue to go from strength to strength. A couple of players weren't available at the weekend, and like I think it's probably coming off the back of an international break as well. It can be quite difficult after having 2 weeks off as well coming into a game.
Yeah,
both teams will see it from a positive perspective. They both got a point each. They will be looking forward to the next game as you know, trying to build up on that rather than, you know, going back home and saying we should have done this and that. So, you know, from both managers, they'll look at it and hone in to the positives of the game, trying to get to the next one.
Now, the next game played in the UCD Bowl. We'll come back to that in a moment. DLR Waves won, Cork won. They were leading for most of the game. DLR struck late to snatch a point out of that. Cork probably shaded this one, in my opinion, from the bit I saw of the game. They'll feel a bit hard done by. We might talk about the venue change and a couple of other things related to Cork in this conversation, but in terms of the actual football, it was a reasonably good performance from them.
I think for both sides, I think both goals are probably a bit preventable. You know, the first goal, it's the cross one way and it's the cross back the other way, and it's sort of not really cut out. And then with the equaliser, it probably could have been cut out a lot earlier. Like, from considering Cork got the result against Bowes, they got the draw against Wexford in the All-Ireland Cup. You know, they were coming into that on the back of good form, two good wins on their travels. And they'll probably be disappointed from a DLR Wales viewpoint. It's been quite a while since Wales have played. They were an idle team the week before the international break as well. And like, I think when we spoke to Eve Conheedy, it was 3 weeks between games, and it's a real long time. And I think from both of these sides, I'd say Cork would probably be disappointed not to get the 3 points. I think DLR would probably be the happier of the sides getting a point out of it.
Finally, then, what promised to be probably the game of the week, but was a bit more of an empty vessel in terms of scoring opportunities. 0-0 draw at Shells and Shamrock Rovers. Both sides, I think, relatively will be okay with that in terms of they haven't dropped points to their rivals.
I spoke to my managers after the game. Colin Neal was happy. He said that he can still see an awful lot of aspects of what they're doing. It's just not getting there and slightly in the final third. He said he can see them, they're going to click one of these days and thump some team, and they probably will. And if you look at it from a Rovers viewpoint, the missed penalty, poor penalty from Anya. Leah O'Leary with the chance in the second half. I think Leah, and she said it to me herself, she has to score that. She has to find the back of the net from that chance. And Shell's best chance was the goal that was offside for Pearl Slattery. Other than that, I'd say it was a pretty standard enough nil-all draw. It was a battle. It was a pitch was very poor in Tolka. It wasn't great. Owen Wirren sort of criticised it. I know Damien Duff has tried not to in recent weeks. There was a massive gale and breeze as well. It was just one of them games that I think both sides will just walk away saying, yeah, it's a point each. You know, we'll take it, we'll go. I know Rovers haven't won a game yet this year, but if you think about Shells, viewpoint, Shells have drawn 3 games this season in the league. And it's a case that, you know, both of these sides will have to start turning them draws into wins soon.
Talk to us, Alban, about Turner's Cross. Sorry. Talk to us about Turner's Cross, because it's come up in, they've closed the ground. It's caused havoc for both the men's and women's teams. Chat to me about that. You can mention as well the Shells Shamrock Rovers game if you want. Sorry, cut across you there.
No, listen, you know, I'm aware of the time there. From a Cork City perspective and you know, a women's perspective, mainly because, you know, they seem to be at the end of, you know, getting that all the time. It is a ground that it's hired and both teams are meant to play in there. It seems that the men can play, it doesn't matter the weather, but, you know, when it comes to the women, you know, they seem to be thrown around into Bishop Town or, you know, switching games to be played like they did in DLR or Wexford the last time, which I think, you know, shouldn't happen at this level. I'm not too sure where responsibility lies with that and who has to take ownership, you know, to put their finger out and do something on the matter. But the reality is that something will have to be done. You know, they can't be two different treatments in terms of men and women. You know, it has to be the same.
I tell you this now, though. The Munster FA should not be rewarded with under-21s men's games, nor the potential of getting that senior international against France in Turner's Cross in July. They should not be rewarded for this sort of crap. And I hate to use language like that on this, but like you look at last year, I think there was 3 or 4 games that were moved out of the cross. Like now I'm sort of thinking to myself, Cork versus Treaty, the first weekend of May, is due to be live on TG Car. Is Turner's Cross going to be ready for that? It's probably 50-50. And I hope for Treaty's sake that if it's not ready, I hope that they get the opportunity to reverse the fixture and put it in the market's field. Because Treaty shouldn't suffer on losing out on a TV game. Neither should Cork City because the Munster FA can't have the pitch in order. Like, the pitch was poor at the start of the season. It wasn't even the fact that it's got destroyed. Yes, it got destroyed because of the game that was played in that torrential downpour, but it was already in crap order before then. And that it's disappointing. It's unfair to say that the girls are constantly being punished. Like even when the reverse happened.
Alvin mentioned earlier, I was gonna jump in when you're finished, but the men are being out of Turner's Cross as well at the moment. It's not just the women's thing.
Yeah, and it's not good enough. It's not good enough for either team to be out of Turner's Cross because the pitch isn't playable. Like there should be some accountability on the Munster FA because you look at that when that game goes ahead later in the season when they reverse that fixture. Say the men, for example, they reverse a fixture. One of the fixtures is Finn Harps. What happens if it's depending on when it's going to be replayed? If it can't be played, and has been moved to a different night where they make it a less crowd. They're on a good spin at the minute. You know, the club is impacted because the club loses out financially as well. And like it's not good enough that we're seeing these sort of things with pitches being completely unplayable. Like, somebody has to hold our account up for it.
No, I don't disagree with you. Let's take a quick look at the league table. Of course, doesn't irrelevant for this week because it's Avenir Sports Cup. We'll talk about that in a moment. But Galway, as we've mentioned a few times, 100% record so far, 12 points clear, or 12 points at the top of the table, 5 clear of Athlone Town. A couple of teams then there, very few points separating Shells, Peas and Treaty with Rovers and Cork City back on 4 points. Bows on 3 and Sligo Rovers, Delor Waves and Wexford FC surprisingly possibly at the foot of the table there from Wexford's point of view. We will take a quick look at the fixtures of the season ahead, or the weekend ahead, which is of course 8 Avenir Sports Cup games. I might bring up the league tables here so we can go through them kind of as they come up, if I can do that. Here we go. So in Group A we have, let me zoom in there a second. Bohemians, Linfield, Piemont and Lisburn. That's the table as it stands. Those games, Linfield host Bohemians while Piemont make the journey to Lisbon, or Lisburn on Sunday. So we could see Bohemians seal a place in the quarterfinals with a win, lads. What's your thoughts on that?
I'm definitely thinking Bohemians win here, and I'm not being biased at all. 50.
Yeah, you're going to go for the win there completely. Interesting to see how that pans out. Peas, of course, need to win to keep their title or their quarterfinal hopes alive, because a defeat at Lisburn will put them under pressure to make the top two and qualify for the quarterfinals. Into Group B, Cork City, Wexford, Cliftonville and Shells all on a single point. Their games this week, Shells host Cork City, while the other game is Cliftonville and they travel down to Wexford. So a fair bit of travel for this group this week. Aaron, I might ask you your thoughts on how this is going to go this week. Can they put themselves in the quarterfinals?
I wouldn't be surprised if Cork get a point against Shelburne, and in the other game, Cliftonville probably get the 3 points. And the reason why I say I wouldn't be surprised if Cork get a point, I suspect, based off the conversation I had with Owen Wyron last week, that he's not going to risk any player who's maybe not 100% ready to go. And you've seen what they've done in the first game. They sort of made multiple changes. I suspect he may do that again. And I think from their viewpoint, I think the league is the most important. And from Wexford, it's just been a really, really, really poor start to the season. And being off last weekend, again, it's a three-week gap. Can they bounce back? It'd be interesting to know what's been said in that Wexford dressing room the last week to 10 days, because I think we need to see a big reaction. And this is their opportunity this weekend. But Cliftonville,
is this an opportunity for Wexford to kind of get some morale back into that dressing room?
It is. And if they don't get a result out this weekend, I think there could be a lot of pressure on down there, because they're currently sitting bottom of the league table. They've only got a draw in the All-Ireland Cup. They were beaten out the gate by Bowes in the league, and again, they're being beaten in games where they're expected to get results. So yeah, I think it is an opportunity, but I'm not sure at the minute if it is going to be one that they will take advantage of.
Yeah, Group C, of course, Treaty United, your old side, Alban. They face a journey, I think, to Crusaders on Sunday. That's a big journey for them, while DLR and Shamrock Rovers will do battle in Tala at 4 o'clock on Saturday. Crusaders leading the way at the moment. Treaty, it's a big ask for them to go and take a result in Seaview.
I think they are well capable of taking a result in Seaview, on the basis of what we have seen so far. I can certainly see Treaty getting the point out there, and you know, it will be quite interesting actually to see Shamrock Rovers and DLR, and you know, again, that could be a game that potentially DLR could take another point you know, on the road.
Just a reminder for people this year, the Avenir Sports Cup, it's the top two go through rather than just the group winner this year, with the fact that it was actually having quarterfinals with a little bit more time and play in the group stages.
Yeah, final group, of course. I'll just zoom in a bit more. Athlone Town and Galway lead, surprisingly, given their position in the league table. Sligo Rovers and Glentoran, they are also in that group. So the fixtures this week, Galway United host Northern side Glentoran, while Athlone hosts Sligo Rovers on Saturday evening. This is a must win for Sligo and Glentoran if they want to keep their hopes alive, really, in this weekend's action.
I think Galway and Glentoran will be a cracking game. I think it could be a very, very good game. Like, if you're a Tommy Ewer, like, realistically, in this sort of group, you know you're going to be struggling to get out of group. I think he's going to continue to try and just build on what he's starting in the first couple of weeks of the season. And, you know, you look at the performance in the All-Ireland Cup against Galway. They sort of improved massively when they played them again a week later in the league. And I wouldn't be surprised if he continues to try and do things. But I'd expect them to go really strong in this game. If you're Kieran Kilduff, do you really want to risk many of your big hitters? Do you sort of how do you sort of manage that? That's the interesting question. I think I can't see Glentoran winning, but I wouldn't be at all surprised, depending on what team Athlone play, if Sligo could get something out of it.
So the fixtures, just run through them quickly. Shells versus Cork, 2 o'clock in Talca Park. Linfield and Bohemians, 3 o'clock in Midgley Park in Belfast. Shamrock Rovers and DLR in Talla at 4, while 5 o'clock, Galway and Glentoran are in Amadeusi Park. Cliftonville, the visitors to Ferry Carrig to face Wexford. They, of course, finalists in this competition last year. Athlone Town and Sligo Rovers on Saturday evening to finish off the evening's entertainment. Sunday sees two games, both in the north. Lisburn Ladies versus Piemont, while Crusaders host Treaty United. Both those games kicking off at 4 o'clock. And, of course, most of those games on LOI TV. I think you pointed out two games that weren't.
So the only two. It's the Linfield game and Crusaders are the only two that aren't on. I'm a little bit surprised because I thought I've seen a game being done from Seaview recently. Yeah, I know it just definitely was the facilities to do them there. I'm a little bit surprised maybe that it isn't.
In terms of that, the one thing we haven't talked about, and we might just wrap up on this, is the announcement during the week that Cork City got a warning for making 5 substitutions across 4 windows at the game against Bohemians. They got a slap on the wrist. No real punishment as such. Does that kind of mean that it's now fair game, or is it what it literally means, a warning? Alban, you would have dealt with this last year. It's not a new thing, but it's so easily in the heat of the moment that you might forget just how many times you stop play to bring players on.
Well, realistically, briefly, you know, there is a couple of issues there. One, I would maintain that, it will set a precedent to other teams to potentially go and say that we forgot. I didn't mean that. Two, you know, we need to understand the issue, where it came from. You know, was the fourth official not copying to what was being done? You know, obviously, you know, they are well knowledgeable. At least, you know, they should be about the roles. But, you know, does that mean that they have to go back to the referees and you know, slap their hands for the batter? And in terms of punishment, genuinely, will that have happened into a men's game? You know, you have to ask the question. And I can't see that, you know. So we have to be fair in relation to the roles. Keep at the roles, and potentially, you know, I don't know what the punishment, you know, could be, because, you know, it will be unfair also, you know, in the last few minutes of the game to take away the 3 points. But, you know, there has to be some sort of repercussion. There has to be some sort of, you know, rules that we are able to apply throughout the league.
And I think it makes a ridiculous situation if you have a rule and it's not enforced. That being said, it's a bit of a ridiculous rule.
Yeah, but it's a rule that's there. I have two things that I want to bring up on this, but the first one I want to ask Alban a question on it first. Alban, when you were managing last year, because there's times where when I'm in grounds like Piemont, I will sometimes stand at the dugout where just between the two dugouts, and the fourth official will often turn around to the manager and be like, okay, you've made this many subs in this many stoppages. Is that a thing that happens more around grounds, or is that only with certain lines fourth officials will turn around to you and say that?
In the past, obviously, you know, I've always asked, especially when there have been certain situations, and I remember vividly one moment that there was a concussion in the first half without going through the names of games or players. And I wanted to make a substitution in the second half due to that. And I was not allowed because apparently I did not mention to the referee at halftime that that was a concussion. Obviously, it was clear to see why the player went out. But, you know, sometimes the clarity of the rules and interpretation of what that means, you know, gets lost in translation at times. But, you know, answering your question in relation to do all of them do it, most of the time the fourth officials, they will be in the referee's ear all the time, be that for subs or free kicks or handballs or, you know, whatever the case might be that they see going, you know, on their side of the game, they will be, you know, on the side very lively, translating the message.
In terms of precedence, Breffni, we have to take it back to the FAI Cup a couple of years ago when Tegan Lynch was on the team sheet, she was off the team sheet, she was on, off, so where there was multiple team sheets submitted. And on that occasion when it was submitted, the only reason it didn't go further is because Shelbourne turned around and said, listen, we're not, we lost fair and square on the day. The problem here is that, in my opinion, I have a feeling that the only logic I can think that they have put it down as a warning is because they have deemed that it is official's error rather than Cork City error. If it's a Cork City error, then Cork City should have been docked the 3 points. There's no replaying the game because we can't do that, and it's not. They should have been docked the points, and they should have gone to Bowes in that situation. If it is a Cork City error, them saying a warning, to me, it seems as though they are saying it's an official error. But the problem is the next time this happens, or if this happens again, be it the men's game or the women's game, that team has to get a warning.
Yeah,
that team cannot get
a three-point
deduction. And that's that is the dangerous thing here. And, like, I was at the game in question, and I wasn't paying attention to substitutes, but the fact that it was raised by Bowers, and Bowers said, hold on, why has this happened? Then, for me, there's no accountability as to how that decision was made, that a warning is being given. Like, is there going to be learnings from it? Who knows? Because we don't know why decisions have been made or why a warning has been given. So the problem is while they've come out and said a warning is going to be given for this, there's so much speculation that's coming as to the why, which is probably a lot of the problem here, is that everybody's going to be speculating the why because we don't know how the decision was reached.
I will say, though, that fundamentally, whether you make 3 or 5 substitutions in 3 windows or 4 windows really has little to no impact on the game, particularly if it's very late in the game. But it is a rule and it should be observed. And you're right, it's the precedent that's been set. But listen, we're not going to solve that problem. The FAI have enough headaches. I'm sure it's not top of their list of things to fix as they go looking for a new CEO and senior team manager and probably another half a dozen positions that need to be filled in there as well. Albin, thanks so much for joining us, for giving your expertise and your knowledge. It's been great chatting to you. Aaron, as ever, your presence is always appreciated on the show. We'll be back next week with a look at the Avenir Sports Cup, and I'm sure it's going to be a really quiet week in the League of Ireland Women's Premier Division. It always isn't it? Listen, we'll be back to you again next week. We went a bit over time this week, but with Albin and so much happening over the international break in the last few weeks, we said we'd just stick around. We'll be back next week, not quite sure what day yet, but we will let you know as soon as we can, and you can of course catch the show wherever you get your podcasts or on our socials and YouTube channel in particular. Talk to you again next week.